If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. And that was the theme from Creature Features, which aired in the early 70s on WGN in Chicago. It also meant that overnight legends Eddie Schwartz, Steve and Johnny were going to talk about Chicago's most frightening ghost stories in and around town with the late Richard Crowe. For hours, they lamented about the ghostly hauntings of places like Graceland Cemetery, Bachelor's Grove, as well as Archer Avenue, Resurrection Mary, Montrose Point, the old lockup at the storied Maxwell Street Police Station, and so much more. And a new Halloween tradition that we started a few years back is our guest tonight, and that's Ursula Bielski. And I'll tell you, Ursula is fabulous. She's a historian, parapsychology enthusiast, founder of Chicago Hauntings, and the host of PBS, The Hauntings of Chicago. She's been writing and lecturing about Chicago's supernatural folklore and the paranormal for over 20 years and is recognized as a leading authority on the Chicago ghost lore and cemetery history. She's the author of more than five popular and critically acclaimed books on the same subject, and she grew up in a haunted house on Chicago's North Side, and she joins us tonight. Good evening to you.
How are you?
Always a pleasure to have you in here.
Oh, it's so great to be here.
And we were talking that neither of us have really gotten into and watched any good horror movies yet
no,
this year.
We have not.
Has it been that we think it's still summer with the Cubs playing baseball and Halloween just kind of snuck up on us a little bit? It must be. So, you know, starting off the conversation, and I mentioned this to you off air, that we posted on Friday morning on Facebook the Willowbrook Ballroom sign that said WGN's Dave Player Show with Ursula Bielski, and hours later it burned to the ground.
Yes.
So sad.
So unbelievable. We had just had our 8th annual Chicago Ghost Conference there the weekend of October 8th, and we were there with all our great friends from all over the country, and Rich Coes was there. With
how nice is that, huh?
Yeah, and it was just great. It was magical and wonderful, and it was such a joy to be there. And
yeah, a lot of history. And you said the sign is still standing.
It looks like the sign is still standing, but it's called a total loss. Looks like everything's gutted, and wow. I know everybody is offering to rebuild whatever everyone can do. I don't know what
the owners iconic place.
Think about that. Yeah,
it's a haunted place that we always talk about, but it's iconic. I mean, so many family weddings and so forth that I've been to at that place before, and you know, I had seen on Facebook maybe earlier in the week of other things happening at the Willowbrook Ballroom. It's just so sad to see that happen so close to Halloween, right?
It's
yeah. And you said, too, that you think there was a fire in the 30s, maybe?
There was one fire before. I don't know what the damage was like during that fire. That wasn't long after it opened.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Let's kick this off with conversation about Archer Avenue and the Willowbrook Ballroom before we get to Resurrection Mary, which I already have a million people texting about on the screen here, of course, naturally, I bet.
Archer Avenue is one of the most haunted roads in the world. It's known as that by paranormal investigators going back generations. And there are several reasons that I think that's the case. I think one of the main things is that it's believed to be a ley line. It's a Native American road. And you know all these in Chicago because they're the only diagonal streets. Mm-hmm. When Chicago was laid down on the grid system, some of these diagonal streets were left, and these are the ancient Indian trails. And Native Americans tell us that their ancestors actually put down their roads along spiritual or sacred lines in the landscape. And these are places that just tend to have paranormal activity. Another thing about Archer Avenue is that it was the building route of the Illinois and Michigan Canal, where hundreds or even thousands of Irish American immigrants died along that route from hunger, thirst, disease, infighting. It was just a terribly funded project. But that canal was actually built along the route of the ancient Indian road. And so not only is that an ancient Indian trail and possibly a ley line, but many deaths along that road as well. The other thing about Archer Avenue is that there are many waterways that run parallel to it. Along with the I&M Canal, there's also the Des Plaines River, the Sanitary and Ship Canal, the CalSag Channel. And paranormal investigators always look to water as a source of paranormal activity. We think that all of these experiences that we have, whether we're seeing ghosts or hearing ghosts, experiencing things, that this is all electricity. And so water is such a great conduit for electricity. So we think that places like Archer Avenue that have a lot of water in the area, or just Chicago in general, on the shore of Lake Michigan and with the Chicago River and the Fox River, Des Plaines River, that we're just going to have a lot more activity because of all the water.
But there's so much that happens from a haunted perspective on Archer Avenue, the Willowbrook Ballroom, Resurrection Cemetery, which I was telling my daughter yesterday, my grandparents are there, my great-grandmother and my great-grandfather are buried there, and a lot of other family, and I explained to her some of those stories and played part of her interview from last year, which totally freaked her out. I said she slept with us all last night as a result, but the Willowbrook Ballroom, specifically, the great stories there, and they're all kind of tied into Archer Avenue and Resurrection Mary.
They are. There's no story like Resurrection Mary. Nothing like it. And there are even numerous locations along Archer Avenue that are haunted in and of themselves. But she's made appearances at them as well. So, yeah. Such as Chet's Melody Lounge right across from Resurrection Cemetery.
Yeah.
This has been a place where she is believed to have come in not once but twice, dropped off by cab drivers. She has told the drivers that she was going in to get the cab fare, never came out. Cab drivers angrily have gone in to find that no one had come into the bar. Wow. So this place, was known itself to be haunted for many years. But it's that, it's that connection to Resurrection Mary, and they always have that Bloody Mary at the end of the bar in case she comes in again.
Right. Now, Resurrection Mary, there's a couple Marys that this is based on. But first, let's tell the story of what some people, there's thousands of people that have seen this over the last century.
Yeah, it's crazy, too, because the year, the year in question is 1933. And that is when one of the first encounters happened. It was by a man named Jerry Palis, now passed away, and he had been dancing at the Liberty Grove Ballroom, which was one of the names for the Willowbrook Ballroom, the O'Henry. And he was apparently with his brother, and they had, at the end of the evening, tried to drive home this girl that Jerry had been dancing with during the evening and never got her there because she vanished from the car. A lot of people aren't aware that there was someone else in the car too. So there were two gentlemen who witnessed this happening. That same year of 1933, there were actually two other vanishing hitchhikers that were reported in Chicago. One of them started to be seen near the old Melody Mill Ballroom in Forest Park. Gentlemen that were dancing at the Melody Mill would be driving home along Des Plaines Avenue, and they'd see this young woman along the side of the road wearing like a flapper dress and a short, dark, bobbed haircut, very stylish. Tried to drive her home, and she would disappear from the car in front of the mausoleum at Forest Home Cemetery.
Wow.
Also that year, travelers to the World's Fair in Chicago of 1933, along the old Dunes Highway, would pick up a woman that was traveling to the fair, and immediately they'd be sorry they gave her a ride because she would start to predict how and when the people in the car were going to die.
Wow.
But before they could kick her out of the car, she would simply vanish. But Mary has been seen I mean, it has to have been thousands of times along Archer Avenue. Yeah. And it's always, you know, one of a couple of different scenarios. Either the gentleman picks her up at a dance, usually at the Willowbrook Ballroom, the O'Henry, and tries to give her a lift home at the end of the night, and she vanishes from the car. Or she jumps out of the car and runs through the locked cemetery gate or through the fence. On other occasions, people have actually hit her in the road and couldn't find the body when they got out of the car. And they actually feel the contact of the car hitting the body. So these encounters have gone on since at least the 1930s, and some say even earlier than that.
Wow. And you know what? And this is one of the stories that always gets my blood up. And when I see, I tell you, when I get off on Archer Avenue off the expressway, I get a lump in my throat just seeing the sign for Archer Avenue, knowing what went on there. One of the other great stories, and probably, what would you say the most haunted cemetery is in Chicago?
Oh, the most haunted cemetery in the Chicago area is absolutely Bachelor's Grove. That's the subject of my new book. It's 200 pages just about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
Wow. Tell us the story.
Yeah, Bachelor's Grove is a little one-acre settler cemetery. It's located in the Forest Preserves now, 143rd Street and Ridgeland Avenue, part of Rubio Woods. And this is a place that has become known not only as one of the most haunted cemeteries in the world or one of the most haunted places in Chicago, but one of the most haunted places in the world.
Now, you say it's part of the Forest Preserves now or the forest. What was it before? Was it separate in some way?
Yeah, people always say, like, why did people build the cemetery in the middle of the woods was not forest to begin with. Bachelor's Grove was a timber stand that was near the cemetery in the early 1830s when settlers started to come west. And this was right before the first public land sales in Illinois. And so there were a handful of settlers that were in the area, squatters really. And so this was a burial ground where some of the earliest settlers in the area were buried. And it was after the 1920s when the Forest Preserve district was developed. They, you know, went through Cook County and condemned whatever land they wanted. So there were a lot of farms of the early settlers in that area that were condemned by the Forest Preserve District. And probably sometime after 1940, that area was reforested, as much of the Cook County preserves were. So they weren't, it's not original forest.
Who actually maintains the cemetery? Is it the Forest Preserve?
It's a little tricky. I mean, the Forest Preserve District, of course, owns the Forest Preserve area. The cemetery itself is owned by the Real Estate Management Office of Cook County. It was privately owned, though it was never officially established as a cemetery. It was privately owned through most of the 20th century. But in 1976, it was condemned by the county. So, it was then, you know, taken over. It was locked up by the county, which lasted a couple of weeks before the, you know, vandals tore the fence down again. And that's been pretty much the way of things.
So you can walk through it now.
You can. People always ask if they can visit. It has the same visiting hours as the Forest Preserve. So sunrise to sunset, 365 days a year.
Is that part of your tours?
You
must tour through there.
You know, we do sometimes do events there. I'm part of, a very loose group of people that is very concerned about Bachelor's Grove, that, you know, that cleans up there, that does a lot of the history and genealogy for it. And so we will have events there that are cleared through the Forest Preserve. We're going to try to do a wreath laying at Christmas, and we have picnics. And when we have those events, we always take people through the cemetery.
Picnics were very common. I remember my great-grandmother telling me that in cemeteries, you would go sit by the graves and you'd have lunch.
Many people remember picnicking at Bachelor's Grove when they were children, and fishing in the quarry pond and swimming in the quarry pond. There.
Wild. Tell us about some of the experiences people have had at Bachelor's Grove.
It's incredible. There's such just myriad experiences that people have there. And each one of these experiences, I've literally collected hundreds of reports of them. I think this one of the strangest ones is of the so-called vanishing house or magic house that people have seen there over the years. Everyone sees the same house. It's a white farmhouse from around the turn of the 19th century with a wraparound porch, a porch swing, light burning behind heavy curtains. And each person who sees it, they say that they walk towards it and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller and then eventually disappears. Or they try to get closer to it and it gets further and further away. The most chilling thing about the sightings of this house is that when people see it, they say that the sighting is accompanied by a feeling of malevolence, an intelligence that that frightens them, and that they also feel that whatever is doing this is enjoying frightening them. A very dear friend, Amelia Cotter, she's also a paranormal investigator and an author here in Chicago, and she experienced seeing this house with her whole team of investigators several years ago, and she said it took her many years to get over the experience, and she didn't even like to think about it. And she says even now, sometimes when she thinks about it, she doesn't want to think about it, because she feels when she thinks about it, whatever that was knows she's thinking about it.
Wow.
And I've never heard investigators react to something like
that. Or understand the feeling of what's happening like that.
But that feeling at Bachelor's Grove, that there is something malevolent there that's enjoying the feeling that it gives you.
Dave from 423 said he had an encounter at the Days Inn on Clark Street. Dave, you're on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm.
Hello, this is a great show tonight.
Thank you, thank you. So what did you experience at the Days Inn?
I was staying there with a friend. It was about 14, 15 years ago. And we were both asleep. And all of a sudden, the TV came on, full volume. And I jumped up and I asked my friend, what are you doing? Why did you turn the TV on? And he said, I didn't turn it on. And we looked for the remote was on the other side of the room, so nobody had touched the TV. And then the next day, we were taking a cab back to the hotel, and we didn't say anything about it to the cab driver, but he said, oh, that place is haunted. I said, you ever watch it in there? So,
Ursula, what do you know about the Days Inn?
Is this this is the Days Inn? Is this at Clark and Diversey?
Yes.
I have never heard that hotel is haunted. I wonder if that cab driver had other people tell him experiences that they had there. But that's interesting.
Is it an older building, the Days Inn, that's there, Dave?
It's that goes back to, I think, I would say probably like the 30s or 40s.
Okay. All right. So there's a possibility that.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely. Now, just to set the tone before we go to break here, and this happened, I mentioned this in the beginning of the show, that when Kevin Richter was producing, we were talking about some of this, and then we were talking about Eddie Schwartz and Richard Crowe, that light started flickering above my head. There's a light flickering,
right there.
Do you feel it? Do you see it in here? Joey, seriously, do you see it in here?
In the corner?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
This corner over here.
And,
but this one is a real one here. And then the other thing you talked about, water. Right before the show started, there is water dripping into the studio that I've never seen before in the 5 years I've been here. Dripping down the wall in the corner over here by our time clock and our camera. And I can see it in the window, too. There's water coming onto the window. Very interesting. Always when you come in here. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have more. And your calls too, 312-981-7200 when we come back on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking about Haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski. And if you have a haunted experience you'd like to share, call or text us, 312-981-7200. We had a caller asking about, since we're on the subject of cemeteries, let's talk a little bit about Graceland Cemetery.
Oh, that's dear to my heart. That is where I met my first Chicago ghost, little Inez Clark. My dad used to... I did not like to go to school when I was a kid, and my mom was a school teacher. And so when I was four and, started preschool, my mom went back to teaching, and my dad was a police officer, and he retired from the police department. He was in his 50s, and he didn't make me go to school usually. And so he would take me around and give me sort of his own education and you know, in his own way. And we went to a lot of cemeteries where he would teach me about Chicago history through the people that were interred there. And Graceland was way up on the list. So he would take me to Graceland often. It was right near our house. We lived, I grew up at Irving Park and Western.
Oh, okay.
So he'd take me around Graceland and he'd show me the graves of, you know, Marshall Field and the Pullmans and the Palmers and such. But I always said, tell me the ghost story. Tell me the ghost story.
Yeah.
And so he'd always take me to the grave of little Inez Clark, marked by this beautiful statue of this little girl in her beautiful dress with a little parasol in her hand. And it was so spooky because there's a glass case around the statue. And he used to tell me that they had to put this glass case around the statue because it would disappear all the time, especially during thunderstorms. And so this was the little ghost girl that I grew up hearing about, and probably one of the main reasons why I came to do what I do, that little story of Inez Clark. But, you know, that story, there's been a lot of controversy about it, people claiming she never existed, for people claiming that none of it is true. It's one of those things where I have met so many people over the years that have had experiences visiting Graceland with their children who have wandered away and have been found playing in the vicinity of Inez Clark's statue, who have said that they were playing with this little girl and wow. that they were running around and playing tag with her, talking to her, and even some who say that they, you know, that she said that her name was Inez. Another great story at Graceland, which I just love, there's a tomb that is kind of holed out of the ground's been built up a bit, and it's in the Montrose Wall side of the cemetery. It's the tomb of Ludwig Wolf. And they say that he was very claustrophobic in life, so he didn't want to be buried underground. So he had this sort of ground built up so that his tomb could look like it was underground, but it's not. And it's got a ventilation system and all of that. And so the residents of these apartment buildings on Montrose Avenue for years would talk about when the moon was full that you could see the phantom dog that this gentleman had in life, this wolfhound, pacing back and forth, kind of guarding the entrance to the tomb with these glowing green eyes.
Is the dog buried there?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of, but apparently in life they were inseparable. So, gosh, what a great story.
Yeah.
Another great story at Graceland is of, you know, probably the most famous piece of funerary art in Chicago, which is the beautiful statue called Eternal Silence by Laredo Taft, which shows this, it's probably an 8-foot-tall Grim Reaper-like figure, bronze with his cloaked arm up to his face. You can just see his eyes above the arm. And there was a legend about this statue when it was first erected that you could not look into the eyes of this statue without getting a premonition of your own death. So people still travel there to try and do this. I've never had any luck with it myself, but I'm not sure if anyone has.
Now, there's in these cemeteries, and I saw it at Resurrection, there are pictures on some of the gravestones, and they're like old. They're like from the 1920s, maybe, or even turn of the century. What was the purpose of that? Just as a memory to what they looked like?
Yeah, this is very popular in a lot of our ethnic cemeteries in Chicago and elsewhere. And you know, I think that company that makes those their little
still
porcelain
around
plaques is a Chicago company, but makes them for all over the nation. But there with probably the most famous one of those in Chicago is at Mount Carmel Cemetery in Hillside. Very famous ghost story of the Italian bride, Julia Piccola. She was she died in the 1920s, and she was in the ground for 6 to 7 years while her mother had nightmares that she was being, you know, begging to be dug up. Julia had died in childbirth, and she was buried in her wedding dress with her baby in her arms. And so after these 7 years, the tomb was finally brought up. The coffin was brought up after Julia's mother consulted with her parish priest. And he said, well, let's bring her up, and hopefully we'll give this some peace. So they opened up the casket, and there 7 years after Julia's death, she looked like she was just sleeping.
Wow.
Completely, perfectly preserved. But the baby in her arms was totally decomposed. But if you visit the gravesite today, you'll see at the base of the monument over her grave a porcelain plaque of her on her wedding day, and then another one next to it of her lying in her casket 7 years later, the day that she was dug up.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to have to look that up. Sue, you have a question for Ursula. You're on 720 WGN.
Hi, yes. Yes, thank you. Good morning, and thank you, Dave and Ursula.
Sure.
And I want to say about 25 years ago, I was in college doing a photography project. I enjoy history and old cemeteries, and I love Graceland. And it was a very windy day, but I was there taking some pictures and so on around there in Graceland. And I was about ready to take a picture at Daniel Burnham's grave site. And then I was just thinking what you had mentioned about water also, Ursula. And anyway, at the very last second, I had a different change of thought, and I turned in the opposite direction. I was looking on a map to see what that monument is across from the gravesite. And at any rate, right at that moment, by the time you heard the sound, it would have been too late for me. A tree cracked from the base, from the bottom. A tree cracked and fell right where I would have been standing there.
Wow.
At Burnham's. And I don't, you can take that how you will, but I, you know, remember that all these years later. I mean, it cracked from the base.
Wow.
And I took a picture of that, and, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's
yeah, wow, that's really strange. Yeah, I wonder if someone was looking out for you.
That's it. And I had a friend there with me, too, and they were like, well, and like I said, by the time you would have heard the sound, you know, the tree's already down.
Amazing.
And I just wanted to mention, call that in. And
no, interesting story. Interesting story. Thank you, Sue. No, I appreciate that very much. Their stories are endless.
They are. They really are. Every time you think there can't possibly be any more, there definitely are.
Elliot, you're on 720 WGN. You have a story about from Shelbyville, Indiana, a cemetery out there?
Yeah, I do. Actually, me and a friend went to visit Sandy Allen's grave in Shelbyville, Indiana. And we saw a spirit arise from her graveyard, from her tombstone.
Was this during the day or at night?
It was at night.
What did it look like? What was the experience like?
Well, it was intimidating because it was a tall shadow, and she was taking her hand and pointing her finger and pointing it to herself, you know, like curling her finger to herself, and it was just freaky because, like, she was a giantess, and I was, like, freaked out, you know?
So both of you saw it, you and your friend?
Yeah.
How long did it last?
It lasted about 5 minutes.
Wow, that's quite long for an apparition to be seen.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, especially if you know who Sandy Allen is, she's really tall.
Right. So how did she disappear when she finally left you?
Well, she disappeared after she stood right over me. She stood right over me, and I'm 6'1", and she was 7'7", so it was pretty intimidating, and I was scared, and it's like I wanted to scream, but I couldn't, because I was so scared, I didn't know what to do, you know?
Is this a gravesite that's known to be haunted? Is she known to appear there?
You know, I'm not sure, but I know what happened when I visited her.
Oh, wow, so you were just checking out the cemetery, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, fascinating.
Great story. Thank you very much, Elliot. Appreciate it. Yeah, absolutely. All right, more ghost stories when we get back on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking about Haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski. And if you have a haunted experience you want to share, 312-981-7200. I want to talk a little bit about Marshall Field & Company. The Macy's store on State Street. A lot of people might not know this story, and it's tied into the Eastland disaster, or is it tied into that movie theater, or to both?
To the Iroquois Theater.
Iroquois Theater. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit first about the Iroquois Theater.
Yeah, the Iroquois Theater fire is one of the deadliest disasters in Chicago history.
1903.
602 people died in the fire. The theater had only been open for a few weeks. It had opened in November of that year, and then the fire occurred on the afternoon of December 30th.
It's the Oriental Theater now, right?
Correct, okay. Yes. Well, it's a new building that was built on the same spot. The Iroquois Theater fire disaster should not have happened. The building was opened to the public before it should have been. It wasn't finished. And so a lot of fire safety features had not yet been installed. But they had sold all of these pre-sale tickets before the grand opening, and they didn't want to refund any of those tickets. So they went ahead with the opening. And it goes that the fire inspectors and city officials were paid off to allow the building to open. And so on the afternoon of the 30th, there was a matinee performance that was going on for school kids and their families, you know, during the Christmas holidays. And it was a musical comedy starring Eddie Foy, big vaudeville star of the day. I think that there were about 200 standing room only tickets sold. Wow. So it was packed with people, as it always had been since it opened. And the first act was fine. Second act started, and there was a fire that broke out on the stage when one of the footlights sparked. And it's really chilling out. Did you see the exhibit at the Chicago History Museum with a lot of the artifacts from
that
Chicago?
That are just melted.
Yeah, yeah, they have actually this footlight that started the fire.
So they had the original. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. Really haunting, truly. But the fire, you know, it led to so many people being trapped inside. The doors opened inwards, so people were trapped inside and unable to open the doors because of the crush of people. We had a lot of changes that happened because of the fire, like doors that have to open outward, illuminated exit signs over exit doors. So it led to a lot of good changes, but all of those people perished. And, you know, you can still go there today to the alley behind the theater, because that's where 125 people died. They fell or jumped or were pushed to their deaths five stories because the fire escape had never been installed. So this is a place that is still called Death's Alley. That's the name that was given to it by journalists after the fire because of all the death there. And you'll still won't find a plaque or a memorial of any kind in the theater or in the alley. But that is one of the most haunted places in Chicago. And people talk about, hearing children playing out in that alley and laughter and talk about smelling smoke and so many kinds of phenomena. But the morgue, the temporary morgue and hospital for those victims was Marshall Field and Company, which is Macy's today.
It was close.
Yeah, it's just a kitty corner, you know, from the theater. And they had elevators to take the victims up to the eighth floor, which was a large empty space at the time, office space, storage space. Of course, they also had blankets and sheets and towels
from
in abundance.
Department. Yeah.
So many people who had already died were brought there. Many people died there. And over the years, there has been a strange number of suicides that have occurred from that floor.
Yeah, I was seeing that. And the elevator crashing to the ground, too, right? Was
right.
That another
yeah,
one?
Yeah, that was soon after it opened.
In 1905, Marshall Field Jr., just part of the tragedy, he shot himself.
Yeah, he did. He shot himself in his home on Prairie Avenue. And there was a lot of talk about that, too, that he had, they said he was cleaning a gun and accidentally shot himself. But there was a lot of talk immediately that he was in some kind of dealings with a woman at the Everly Club in the Old Levee District. And he had been done away with or had killed himself to take, you know, the focus off of his family or something. But he is still believed to haunt his old home on Prairie Avenue, which is condos now.
Wow. Look at that. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have more haunted conversation. We're going to talk about the Congress Hotel and even Wrigley Field as we celebrate the World Series. And we'll do that next on 720 WGN. State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Ursula Bielski about haunted Chicago and Chicago's legendary ghost stories in and around town. And if you want, got one you want to share, 312-981-7200. Jack, you're on 720. You've been waiting for a while. You got a story about the Chicago Theater?
Oh, yes, sir. I was part of the whole renovation there on Broadway, how Hollywood and Chicago came into town. We were with Breakthrough and Demolition, and we did about 7 or 8 of the theaters. When we were in Chicago Theater, we were on stage with a whole group of union workers, big 6'5" guys, and we're all in there taking care of the curtains. And one of the curtains were just raised slightly about a foot off the ground, and it was across stage from us, and we were all 11, 10 feet in the air. And we hear dress shoes walking across the wood floor. And someone in the black dress pants and the black dress dress shoes was walking along the outside of the curtain. We could just see the shoes. I was running the job. I yelled down, "Excuse me, sir, can we help you? Excuse me." I got no answer. I said, "Jose, go down and see what's going on." One of the lower guys on the scaffold jumped down. He moves the curtain aside, and there's absolutely nobody there. 11, 12 men, we all screaming like little girls, running down the street, running out onto the street of Chicago Stadium. It was right about 2007. This is a documented case. I had to put it in my work logs, and there was the EPA. And so we did a lot of asbestos and removal and stuff like that with the demolition. So this is a documented case of over 12 wow. witnesses that saw this gentleman. If I could share real quickly with you, this Bachelor's Grove in the southern suburbs, it's a very famous haunted place in Chicago. There's thousands of stories there.
Just published my 10th book, which is a 200-page book just about Bachelor's Grove.
Yes, and if I could share very quickly, the first time I was there as a kid in a Mustang, our lights were flashing on and off. I used to be able to pull in there. We pulled out of there screaming. Second time I've ever been there in my entire life, the place was loaded with over 1,500 domestic rabbits, like a pet store, empty out rabbits all over inside.
There really?
Yeah, so we took the rabbits and cooked a couple of them and found homes for them. And then the third story, during my son's birthday, it was on October 7th. It was years ago. We went back in, and you parked across the street, and then we went inside. And we walked around. I said, "Let's see." And there's only a handful of graves in there, really. There's only maybe, 20 graves at most. And one modern grave in there. But anyway, we go in and I say, "Just for fun, let's see if we find your birthday." And it's kind of a gross little thing to do. But we went there and sure as heck, John McGee, it's right there. It's in the center of the cemetery. It was on October 7th. And as soon as we saw this, and it's sunny as heck outside, it begins to snow. Right when we find the grave, and it turns out to be the earliest snowfall in the history of Chicago. And that's the God's truth, all three of those stories. So we ran out. But the theater one's pretty funny with the 12 witnesses.
It's pretty cool, Jack.
Well, actually, I'll just real fast, too. I know it's not ghost story, but I was also part of the sighted UFO at O'Hare Field at Terminal 2.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that was in November.
A lot of witnesses.
I was there as a demolition crew. Yeah, all of us saw it. I missed the actual circular disc, but I saw the cut through the cloud that night, and it was exactly perfect frisbee circle giant right through a deep, dark clouds, and you could see the clean sky and the star sky through the circle. So I was also one of the witnesses of that. I got the gypsy. I moved around Chicago a lot, so I ran into the UFOs and ghosts in the theater and snowy days. So,
very cool, great stories, Jack.
World.
Yeah,
a science major at St. Mary's College, and I grew up a very straight, normal person, and have witnessed these the events. I'm not off skew, as they say. You know,
right.
Oh, very cool.
Pension earning man that got to witness these things, and they're for real.
Very cool. No, I appreciate the stories tonight, Jack. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Chicago, remember. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, buddy. 312 was asking about the Congress Hotel, one of the most famous haunted hotels in Chicago. Tell us a little bit about that.
I've investigated the Congress so many times in the past 30 years, and I've stayed overnight there 4 times. The first time, someone was knocking on my door all night long. Nobody there.
Did you let him out? It's an old joke.
Yes, I know it. I'm old too. Second night, worst nightmare, had my covers pulled off me while I was sleeping.
Wow.
And then the last time, two summers ago, I stayed there with my daughter. We had done some ghost hunting in different people's rooms. It was like a weekend. A bunch of us went and had different rooms. And we didn't want to stay in a haunted room, though. My daughter and I do not like to sleep in haunted places. We like
Makes
to ghost
to
hunt.
Me.
But
yeah.
So we were sleeping in one of the rooms that was not supposed to be haunted. And as soon as we turned off the light, we heard two men whispering together at the foot of the bed.
Wow.
And whenever we would start to talk to each other, it would stop.
Interesting.
And then we got quiet, it would start again. It was absolutely chilling. But this place has had, I have a blog entry about it, just countless suicides, murders, accidents. There must have been 100 people who checked themselves into the hotel and then like walked down to the lake and drowned themselves, you know, things
wow.
like that. Just really. Event after event after event going back, you know, to the, it was built for the World's Fair of 1893.
Yeah, that's
so
one of the oldest,
many,
right?
many, yeah. many years of all these strange events.
Are there any other hotels in Chicago that are close to what you've seen at the Congress?
No, nothing close to that. You know, the Drake Hotel has the famous woman in red who is believed to have thrown herself off the roof on opening night, New Year's Eve, 1920.
Wow.
So this woman in red is seen sometimes in the Gold Coaster in the beautiful ballroom there in the Palm Court Tea Room and up on the top floor.
That was about the time, by the way, that this radio station started on the air. It wasn't WGN, yeah. but we were out of the Drake Hotel in the early 1920s.
Were you?
Yeah,
I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Before we ended up at Wrigley in here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but nothing, no other hotel compares to the Congress Hotel anywhere, I don't think.
The old Excalibur nightclub that was the Chicago Historical Society.
Right.
How old is that building?
Oh, that dates to just, you know, a few years after the Great Chicago Fire.
Right.
And that, you know, it's closed now. But it is. I had one of the first experiences I ever had as a young woman. You know, there when it was a nightclub,
yeah.
I was 21 years old, and I was in the bathroom in the basement, washing up, and I felt two hands. I had long hair at the time. Felt two hands go under my hair in the back and pull my hair out to the ends, like pull their fingers through my hair.
Wow.
It was.
Wow. Yeah.
I have the chills just thinking about
yeah.
it again. Many, many experiences there over the years.
But there, what was the reason behind that? Is it just because it's an older building, or was there
always been stories there that, you know, that the building that was there when the Great Chicago Fire broke out was allegedly also made of stone, which was really unusual in Chicago at the time. And the legend is that many people sought shelter in the building during the fire, and some of them didn't make it.
Gotcha.
So that's where a lot of the stories are traced to.
Wrigley Field, as we talk about Chicago Cubs, Wrigley Field, there's some haunted stories.
There are haunted stories. I mean, of course, there's the, you know, the curse of the Billy Goat is what people always talk about. Steve Goodman, the wonderful folk singer from mm-hmm. Chicago, huge Cubs fan, is believed to haunt the place. A portion of his ashes were scattered or buried at Wrigley Field after a lot of effort. He wanted that to begin with, and it was disallowed, but it finally happened. I was part of the only team that I know of that ever did an investigation at Wrigley Field.
Interesting.
And that was in 1998, and that was, of course, when Harry Carey had died early in the year, and the Cubs
and Jack
were
Brickhouse
playing
later,
October
too.
Baseball again.
Yeah.
And so the Tribune Company that owned the team at the time invited a group of us in to see if we could find evidence of Harry Carey in the announcer's box. Nothing, couldn't find anything there. We went out to the dugout, we went to the bullpen, went to the pitcher's mound, home plate, nothing. But you know where we found all the equipment going haywire? In the bleachers.
Oh.
And of course, that's where all the diehard
fans
sit.
Right.
You know, and that's where most ghosts are.
There
are people that just don't want to leave.
I'm sure they're still there.
Really enjoy life.
I'm sure they're still there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Fred, you've got a question. You're on 720 WGN about the Medina Temple.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if you ever check it out or anything, if there's anything floating around there. I've been listening to your guys' show for the last half hour since I'm on my way home from work.
No, I have always wanted to investigate there. That has not happened yet. And I myself have not heard any stories about it, but I've always thought that there has to be some activity at that location. Are you familiar? Have you heard any stories about it?
Oh, we dropped him. He's gone. Okay. Sorry about that. That was a mistake. Susan, you're on 720 WGN. You got a story you want to share?
Hello?
Yes, Susan, you're on 720 WGN.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, actually, I got two things. The first one, I live in Huntley, and I think it's somewhere near here or around here, there was a school bus accident on a railroad track, and all the children passed away. And if you go on and put your car on the track and then put baby powder or flour or something and turn the car off, the car will move off the tracks, and there'll be evidence of children's fingerprints on the back bumper.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to is Munger Road. And it's actually one of numerous places that have that legend attached to it. Munger Road is one. The other is the site of the school bus accident in Fox River Grove that occurred not too many years ago. The first time this was ever reported was in San Antonio, Texas. And these are all incidents where school bus accidents occurred. And the legend says that if you put your car into neutral on the railroad tracks, and put baby powder or talcum powder on the back bumper, that these invisible hands will push your car out of harm's way. Wow. And that
so
you will see the imprint
mind.
Of these children's handprints. No, very, very famous story. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that this actually happened to them, that they tried to do this and it worked. So not sure. I have never seen evidence of it myself, but you're not crazy. This is a very popular story.
Thanks,
Susan.
Blonde
to begin with. So
there you go. There you go.
The other question I had, when I was little, I was adopted, and I found my birth mother a few years ago, and it turns out that our family is Romanian, German, Gypsy, Jew. I'm messed up.
Quite a combo.
Yeah, but the Gypsy part, we go back to Romania all the way, the original caravan, thousands of years, and I found out that on the women's side, even my grandmother was psychic. And when I was little, everybody thought I had imaginary friends. I don't think it was imaginary friends. It didn't freak me out in the beginning, because until the age of 10, it was mostly little girls, 5 years and younger, that I'd be talking to.
Right.
And I could see them.
Right.
Then it went away for a while. Now it's coming back. And if I hear a story on the radio, an Amber Alert or something, 8 out of 10 times, I know what happened before they finished the story. Because if my stomach doesn't hurt, they'll come up fine. If my stomach starts to hurt, something tragic had happened. And it doesn't matter in Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, the surrounding states.
Do your other family members of yours have these abilities?
Not that I know of.
Interesting.
My mother, my birth mother, my grandmother, mostly the women, aunts, cousins, but it was mostly on the women's side.
Right.
But I was adopted, and I didn't stay in contact with her very long. She's a very complicated and tragic reasons why me and my brother were given up. So,
well, oftentimes I think we find that that most children have the ability to see and hear things and entities that we as adults don't, and that at a certain point they realize either consciously or unconsciously that it's not really acceptable to have those kinds of experiences. So I think we start to push them away, push them out of our minds, push them out of our our consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, but you do see, you know, on the other hand, in families where it's encouraged and where it's not frowned upon, that people do tend to maintain more of their abilities. And even studies have been done recently to show that the brain structure is different in children who become adults who were raised in families where these abilities were not discouraged. Your brain is actually different if you are not discouraged from having these.
Yeah, because I was adopted, and the weird thing was is when I met her, you would have thought she raised me. Her favorite color is blue. Mine's blue. I'm an animal, I don't want to say activist, but don't even say anything about hurting an animal. I back them up 100%. She's an animal lover. We were both foster homes. We both collected angels. My favorite holiday is Halloween. Her favorite holiday is Christmas. But I'm telling you, it was, thousands of dollars worth of decorations for that specific holiday. It was like overboard all the way.
Yeah, very interesting.
We had everything. It was like she raised me, and I never met her, and I'm 45.
Yeah. So isn't that
interesting?
And I
never met her until 2009.
Wow.
Something like that. So this is spooky.
Yeah, very spooky. Susan, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. You've got some tours coming up. I want to get to that before we go.
We do. Our Chicago Hauntings tours, of course, are in full swing right now. We still have tours going tomorrow at 4 and 7 p.m. And on Monday, of course, Halloween night, we've got several tours going. And then we've got All Souls Days and All Saints Day tours. And our tours run every weekend all year round as well. And
we also have
our all-day tours that we do sometimes as well. So that's all at ChicagoHauntings.com.
ChicagoHauntings.com. Always a pleasure. Love doing this
with
you.
Thanks so much, David.
All right. Happy Halloween to you.
To you, too.
All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.